Well, collecting honey in the wild is one of the most ancient of human activities, and domesticating bees even goes back several thousand years itself. Humans have taken advantage of bees' industriousness and are happy to enjoy the fruits of their labor. And there's been a recent resurgence in interest for tending hives, even in very urban areas. We're going to learn what it takes to be a keeper and how folks can get started. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in today for Larry Mueller. So glad to have you along with us. Tim Fulton is the president of the Wisconsin Honey Producers Association and a beekeeper himself. Tim, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me. Yeah.
And Jean Hansen is in her fifth year of keeping bees with 10 hives currently. She trains hundreds of people a year on beekeeping and helped found the Dane County Beekeepers Association in 2009. And Jean, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So let's start. Jean, it seems like there really is a large recent increase in interest in beekeeping. What do you think is driving that?
I think the increased publicity through the media about the plight of the honeybees and the difficulty they're having makes a lot of people interested in helping nature and raising bees.
So you think it's more trying to support the bees than necessarily that very nice side benefit of getting all that honey?
About half the people want to support the bees, and the other half feel that the honey is very nice.
Mm-hmm. And Tim, does having beehives, running beehives, tending beehives, how is that a support to the bees themselves?
Well, at this point in time in history, feral bees, that is, bees that have escaped into tree cavities or wherever, are meeting a lot of problems. They generally don't live beyond 2 years.
Hmm.
So for honeybees to be out, you know, free in nature, with the with all the difficulties they have, diseases in the environment and degraded environment, insecticides, etc. They would be in jeopardy.
So are the bees that folks like you are keeping in a hive, are those bees the same bees, same types of bees, that are just out there making honey on their own without any human interaction, or are they different types of bees?
Well, for the most part, they might be the same, because the ones out in the wild are essentially escaped bees, I would say. Research is moving forward in trying to select traits in bees that make them more sustainable in the environment. So
because you're saying that those bees tend to escape anyway. I mean, obviously, when we say keeping bees, they're not being kept in isolation by any means. So you're hoping that those bees that might be more resistant to certain diseases or things like that, that they can actually kind of fortify the wild bees.
That would be a hope. Right?
Oh,
sure.
And Jean, you have hives around Madison of various sizes. What are the requirements of a good location, both for the bees, but also to comply with regulations?
The city of Madison recently passed a very generous beekeeping ordinance. If your yard is big enough and you can keep the hives 25 feet away from your lot line, you're in free. But if your lot is smaller, then you need to have a fence or a row of bushes that forces the bees to fly up out of your yard before
kind of funnels
they
them up.
Fly to the neighbors. A good place to keep bees is around the environmentalists, because they let the clover grow in their yard. They don't poison the dandelions. Bees do very well in the city because there is quite a lot of street plantings and forage for the bees.
Mm-hmm. And so that bee regulation was just recently passed, correct?
That's right.
And Tim, what about the rest of the state? Are regulations like that pretty uniform throughout the state, or are there municipalities that make it even easier or much harder?
It's a patchwork. In the city of Racine, Caledonia, Mount Pleasant, there are ordinances, beekeeper-friendly ordinances. I like to use the example of Honey Creek. They continue to have a prohibition against beekeeping.
In a place named Honey Creek?
Honey Creek, that's just
wow.
That's just wrong, isn't it?
You'd think they just have a natural affinity for it.
I think what happens, someone has a complaint about some critter, And it's a kind of a cut and paste thing. We need an ordinance against goats, let's say, and there's a standard prohibition of critters out there, and you just kind of cut and paste that in. And unfortunately, it includes keeping bees and chickens and all the rest. So that's been kind of the standard, and it's just in place without much thought to the particular prohibition.
And Gene, did you want to add something?
It seems to me that the larger the municipality, the more the people are interested in food production. So bigger cities have better ordinances.
Interesting.
And the little tiny communities that are out in the middle of the agricultural world, they're less interested in having this stuff right in town.
Oh, that's really interesting. And actually, I was just in doing background research for the program. I found out that one of the largest skyscraper type buildings in Paris, in France, the Tour de Montparnasse actually has a huge beekeeping project going on the rooftop. So there you have a really, really big city with a lot of bees. Well, we are talking about beekeeping and producing honey with our guests Gene Hansen and Tim Fulton. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson filling in for Larry Mueller today on the Ideas Network, and we would love to hear from you as well. Are you a beekeeper or perhaps an aspiring beekeeper, thinking about getting started but really not sure what that might take? We'd love to have you call and join in at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can leave a question, comment, or a picture of your hives on our Facebook page. That's The Larry Mueller Show, and Mueller is spelled M-E-I-L-L-E-R. So, Gene, let's back up a little bit and talk about what actually happens in the hives. I mean, you know, we see these bees going around very busy, as we talked about, busy as a bee, and then all of a sudden, you know, we get to enjoy honey that somebody else has harvested often. How and why do the bees produce honey?
The life of the bee in the hive is so interesting. The queen lays eggs in the cells of the comb, and these eggs hatch and produce larvae, just like caterpillars. Mm-hmm. But they don't leave the cells. The bees feed them. When the larva is old enough, the bees cap the cell, and they spin a cocoon in there, just like a butterfly caterpillar. Wow. Then the pupa hatch out of the cocoon, and presto, it's an adult bee. And then those very young bees feed the larva that's coming along after them. They clean the hive. They feed the queen. They evaporate the nectar to honey. They make wax, and they spend 6 weeks inside the hive.
Wow.
And it's only
before they ever go out.
It's only at the end of that time that they fly out and gather honey from flowers for only 3 weeks. And
wow.
Then they come to the end of their life.
Wow. And so there's this constant cycle of bees kind of moving along the process and taking care of the ones coming behind them. But everybody's focus is really on keeping the queen healthy.
Everybody's focus is on keeping the queen alive so she can keep laying eggs and bringing in enough honey to keep them alive over winter. And honeybees are the only creature in nature that gathers more food than they can eat themselves.
Which is what we then go in and enjoy.
That's correct.
Right. Well, we're happy to hear that. Tim, so what about the queen? So it sounds like the rest of the bees have a fairly short life cycle. What about the queen? What's her life like?
If you look at some of the old textbooks, the older textbooks, they talk about the queen living up to 5 years. Probably in the last 10 or 15 years, I don't think that anyone has seen a queen live over 2 to 3.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the standard right now is a year and a half. The bees are capable, if they do have a 4-week-old larva, to produce their own queen or produce another queen to take the original queen's place.
So that actually kind of touches on something I want to ask about. If the average bees are just living a matter of weeks, but the queen is living a couple of years, she's not just a bee among bees. She's a really different creature.
She's the the sex organ of the hive,
of the whole hive.
Some people refer to the hive as a super organism, similar to ants and termites. And so very similar to a mammal in many ways, that whole hive.
Hmm.
So the queen is essentially the female sex organ producing eggs and getting that population up to the point where they can go out and forage and provide that food for overwintering. So her health is extremely important.
Wow. And so, Tim, with one queen, how many non-queen bees, how many worker bees are there supporting her?
In the middle of the summer, in a productive year, you could have up to 60,000 bees.
Wow.
So she's losing population. Those bees aren't, the worker bees aren't living that long, and she has to increase that number up. So she's laying maybe 2,000 eggs a day if there's a good crop of nectar and pollen coming into the hive.
And so, Gene, you said that they go out and collect the nectar and the pollen, and then they evaporate it down into honey. So the queen, I'm guessing, partly because she needs to be protected, does she ever leave the hive? Or does she spend her whole life in there?
The queen normally spends her whole life in the hive, but in order for the species to be propagated, there have to be new hives made. And so when conditions are really good, the hive splits itself up, and they send the queen and half the bees out of the hive and look for a new place to start a new nest.
Wow.
And so then the queen would leave the hive then. But when she gets to the new place, she just goes in and stays there.
Wow. Well, so she can fly, obviously.
She can fly.
Okay, even though she's gone for a big chunk of her life with never stretching her wings, both literally and figuratively.
That's
right. She takes off, takes her group with her, and starts up a new hive.
That's right.
Wow. And then how does a new queen get established in what's left?
So the bees take one of the eggs in what's left, and they can turn it into a queen by giving it special food. And because this food is so rich, the larva develops quickly, and the queen becomes very strong. And when she's mature, she flies out of the nest to mate.
Okay.
And a successful queen mates with 15 or 20 drones high up in the air.
Wow.
And then she finds her way back to the hive and settles down and lays eggs.
So would that nutritional substance be royal jelly then?
That's right.
Okay, and there you go, because the royal jelly turns it into a queen. Oh, wow. Well, that's fascinating. And if you're fascinated by bees and would like to join in, you can do so by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And Peter in Racine has a question, so let's go to the phone. Hi, Peter.
Yes, thank you. Just one comment. Does it bother you that so many people call wasps bees? But I'm lucky enough to have a colony that's volunteered itself into a tree cavity outside of a cottage. And I was wondering, it's rather an open cavity. They're down low in it. I expect they'll try to build up. I was wondering, are there any predators that attack a hive of bees that I could perhaps protect them from without interfering with their...
Great. Let's let Tim feel that one. Tim?
Okay. Yeah, well, the honeybees are a cavity. They do live in cavities. That's what they seek. So we tend not to cherish trees with holes in them, unfortunately. So the number of those sorts of homes are limited, and they take the best that they can get. Generally, they're pretty efficient at protecting the hive and themselves. Of course, a larger hole, larger cavity would make it more difficult. Skunks love honey and young bees. If they can get up into the cavity and get in, they can predate it. Raccoons, the same way to an extent.
Hmm.
So if the hive is strong and thriving, they can pretty well protect themselves. Yellow jackets and hornets can sometimes overwhelm a weaker hive. But you're very fortunate to have some bees in a tree in your yard. That's exciting.
That's great, Peter. You should take a picture if you have it and put it on our Facebook page. I'd love to see what they chose as a makeshift hive. All right. Well, thanks for that call. And you can join in too. We'd love to hear from you, especially if you are a beekeeper or starting to think about beekeeping. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, talking with Gene Hansen and Tim Fulton on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking bees and beekeeping with Gene Hansen, who helped found the Dane County Beekeepers Association in 2009 and is in her fifth year of keeping bees. Also, Tim Fulton, who's the president of the Wisconsin Honey Producers Association and a beekeeper himself, too. And Gene and Tim, there was a question on Facebook from Brady. Can you throw out a budget range for starting a small batch of bees? I'm thinking boxes, the bees themselves, outfits, and whatever other tools are needed. Gene, do you want to take that?
Most people say that $500 will get you started for everything he listed. It sounds like a lot at first, but when you realize that the second year you don't have to spend anything at all, mm-hmm. it's not so bad.
Well, there you go. And where do people find those kinds of supplies? Tim, what are you work with honey producers around the state, I'm sure.
Right.
Is it equally easy to access things?
Sure. If you go online, there's almost too many to look at. in the state, we have a couple of dealers that most of us deal with. One would be Daydant and Son, which is an Illinois company, but there's a branch in Watertown,
mm-hmm.
and we have a brand new manager there, Matt LaForge, and I believe Gene probably knows him from Madison. Is that correct? Anyway, just starting out, they've been an old established company. Lapp's Bee Supply, Dean Lapp in Reeseville, and then there's others, you know, outside of the state, just outside that you know, you know, that will supply you, that will ship you the
mm-hmm.
equipment.
And Gene, so, you do a lot of trainings for people who are getting started. What kind of resources do you recommend?
I would be remiss if I didn't point out that we have a new supplier right here in Madison, Capital Bee Supply.
Oh, okay. So it seems to me that there are all these suppliers and new suppliers coming along, that there really has been quite a surge in interest in beekeeping.
I also want to point out that if you like to build, it's very easy to build nearly all the equipment yourself.
Oh, okay.
And you don't have to buy a bee suit. Any kind of light-colored clothing that you have in your closet works fine.
Great. And Gene, what's the process of actually, once you have your equipment set up, what's the process of getting the bees to start producing? Do you just pop them in there and they know what to do?
You just pop them in there and they know what to do.
You don't have to give them a little demonstration or anything.
Bees are only semi-domesticated, and by cooperating with them, we can achieve a honey harvest. Wow. But really, you can't force the bees to do anything they don't want to.
You can't, just like you can't lead a horse to water and make them drink, you can't force a bee to make you honey. But it seems like you said, it's something that they do naturally and are really driven to do anyway. So that's great. Well, let's go back to the phones and go to Gary in Merrillville next. Hi, Gary.
Hi. My question is, I'm a horticulturalist, and I have a lot of flowers in my backyard. What are some of the bee-friendly or bee-enticing plants and flowers that I can grow in my backyard to attract bees and to help them out with this honey producing?
And Jean?
Actually, the best plants for bees are weeds. Dandelions, clover, black locust trees, basswood, all mints. They work well as garden flowers and as bee forage. Also pumpkins, cucumbers. There would be no cucumbers if there were not insect pollination, which is mostly by the honeybees.
Mm-hmm. So it's really it's a symbiotic relationship, that the bees are getting what they need to make their honey, but they're also in the process pollinating a lot of weeds and planted intentional plants too.
And this is one of the very important uses for bees. Many people have apple orchards and their yield is dropping, and they've found that they must become beekeepers in order to get their apple trees pollinated,
mm-hmm.
or their fields of pumpkins, or their strawberries, or their cranberries.
And Tim, did you have any suggestions to add on kinds of plants to encourage bees?
Well, we have to realize that bees are from Europe originally, so most of the flowers that they forage on are, I would say most, but not all, are introduced plants like clover, those sorts of things. I would certainly, you know, beekeeping changes your mind about plants. As again, we mentioned dandelion, Dutch clover in lawns. I mean, that's a beautiful sight to a beekeeper. spraying those plants out mm-hmm. out of your yard would just be wrong. So there's and bees also forage out, you know, up to 5 miles. So
wow,
they're moving about that, and taking yeah. advantage of the environment in that way.
So that's interesting, Tim, because if they're going that far afield, pun intended, it's not just what our little environment in our yard might be, but it would probably be really good to know what neighbors might be using herbicides or pesticides, maybe do a little education to tell people, you know, it would be really great if you were inclined to not use so many chemicals. And, you know, in return, I'd be happy to provide you with some honey.
That would be excellent. You bet. That would be good advice to the neighbors. And a little sharing of honey and a little sharing of information.
Goes a long way. It does. All right. Well, thanks for that call, Gary. And there was actually a caller who couldn't stay on the line. Jody wondered if it's too late in the year to start a hive. And that brings up a good question, Gene. Is there a season for starting a hive, or when do you
Spring
do it?
Spring is the right season. And beginners pretty much have to buy a package of bees with a queen. This should be ordered in February, March, January. Mm. And the packages are produced in California, where spring comes 2 months earlier, and then shipped to Wisconsin. So they arrive in April,
okay,
maybe early May. So now it's pretty hard to get started unless you have a friend that will let you work
okay.
on one of their hives.
So it's not so much what the bees are going to do or not do at this point. It's whether you can get the bees or not. Okay, I understand. So, but the bees are just doing their thing pretty much all the time. But what happens in the winter, actually?
It's really exciting. Bees do not hibernate. Hmm. They cluster together and keep each other warm all winter and eat the honey they've stored.
Oh, so they work, and then they don't hibernate, but they go into a more low energy period and just feed off. So when you harvest the honey, I'm assuming you have to make sure that you leave enough for them. How do you determine that, Tim?
An experienced beekeeper should be able to you know, heft the hive to determine if there's enough weight. We're looking at around 80 pounds of honey, depending on the variety of bee, for overwintering. So anything above and beyond that, you know, we can harvest.
Great. Wow. So, but it's important to leave enough for the hive. Is honey the only thing that bees eat, or is there something else that some beekeepers add to it or replace honey with?
Well, honey is the carbohydrate source for their diet, and then pollen would be their protein. Generally speaking, if there's a shortage of one or the other, generally there isn't. Industry is making some pollen substitutes, and you can feed them a ratio of syrup, sugar syrup, depending on the time of year, different ratios. But that nothing beats natural nectar and pollen. They will survive on the pollen substitute, but they won't store it. So,
oh, okay,
it tells you they aren't. It isn't exactly the same as natural pollen.
Right. And I definitely want to talk about some of the challenges that face bees and issues there can be with hives. And let's start that conversation with Daniel in Rice Lake, who has a question about an issue with bees. Hi, Daniel.
Hello. I lost my last three hives to Winnie the Pooh or one of his relatives. In the early 90s, Varroa bee mites were just entering Wisconsin. That's when I stopped keeping bees. While bee trees were once not uncommon, have Varroa bee mites exterminated wild colonies, and how much do you have to control them?
Great. Thank you for that question, Daniel. So, Tim, what do bee mites do? Why are they a problem, and what can you do to protect the bees?
Mites, as the caller mentioned, a lot of bees died out due to the mite when it was introduced in the late 80s. The industry has attempted a number of different ways to control the mite. Started out with some organophosphate type poisons that weren't the best for bees either. Mm. At this point in time, we're using some. The industry has just developed some natural acids and some treatments, more natural treatments that are less detrimental to the bees. So things are kind of looking up in that score. The problem with the mites, too, is that they open the pathway to viruses and other pathogens to the bees. But we have some other issues, too, for bees, unfortunately.
And the mites actually get into the hive and affect the bees
exactly,
right there.
Yeah. Okay. They develop within the cell and predate off the larva and pupa.
I'm guessing that's a pretty vulnerable time for the bees.
We're also developing, researchers are developing bees that identify mites as a problem, and will remove mites themselves from the hive. So that's an exciting part of research that is ongoing.
Well, Herbert in Wales actually has a problem too, and it sounds like with hive beetles. Hi, Herbert.
Good morning.
What's going on with your hive?
Well, hives are doing fairly well. Always the mite problem, but I was up at labs and got some bees a month ago or so, and I saw this little funny-looking thing called a hive beetle control mechanism. It looks like kind of a comb-looking thing, and all I could find out about it is that I should be putting mineral oil on half of this piece of this instrument, and somewhere I should put it in the hive. Any ideas?
Tim?
Sure. Well, to begin with, small hive beetle came from Africa, and it's a pretty nasty little predator. Fortunately, this far north, they don't seem to want to propagate. They tend to propagate in the soil, and they need a little bit warmer temperature. That being said, beekeepers who move bees from down south tend to bring bees with the hive beetle in the hive, so they can be a nuisance. As far as treating for them, I guess what I do, I tend to look very carefully when I go into my bees to make sure that the hive beetle isn't present, and deal with it accordingly. I try to let the bees tell me what they need rather than throw chemicals or that sort of thing.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. Thanks for that call, Herbert. Gene, I want to turn back to you. You're a beekeeper. You have several hives around Madison. Have you experienced issues like that, or are the hives pretty self-regulating in terms of controlling, issues and things like that?
I haven't had any problem with the small hive beetle. I've never seen one. The bees have mites, and there's so many hives in Madison that if you didn't have mites at the beginning of the year, you will at the end. Uh-huh. Drones fly from hive to hive, and even the bees go in other people's hives and take the mites with them. And it's a constant battle. I feel that if I can control the mites on my bees, then the bees can deal with viruses and other kinds of problems that I can't affect anyway. And so I test my bees periodically to make sure the mite level is low. And when it goes up, I reach for some of the treatments.
Mm-hmm. And so you just said something interesting that I want to go back to. You said that the drones go from hive to hive. So a drone that's working in one hive doesn't necessarily only stay there. They'll actually visit other hives?
In general, they go back to the hive that they came from. Okay. But if there's a change in the weather or I don't know what the drone is thinking, but the drones are welcomed in just about any hive they want to go into.
Oh, interesting. And so you may have a constant kind of population level in the hive, but that doesn't mean it's exactly the same bees at all times. Oh, that's really interesting. Well, we are talking about bees and honey and beekeeping with Gene Hansen, who is a beekeeper and helped to found the Dane County Beekeepers Association, and also Tim Fulton, who is a beekeeper and president of the Wisconsin Honey Producers Association. I am Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network, and we are happy to have you along. And we have quite a few more people on the line, so let's go back to the phones. And Dan in Waupun. Hi, Dan.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I've been considering getting into beekeeping, and I talked to a person down in Milwaukee. I think his name is Charlie Keenan, who developed something called a bee pod that's supposed to overwinter them much better. Do you know anything about that?
Okay, Gene, I think does. Gene?
A bee pod is a very elegant top bar hive. And top bar hives are used in Africa because they're cheaper to build. Of course, in America, we don't build them the cheapest way possible. They're smaller hives. They work really well for the bees that are living in them. I personally feel that it's a little bit of a fad.
And why are they being promoted as a better way to overwinter? No, really. Tim, did you have anything to add to that?
The pod or the top bar hive is arranged longitudinally rather than vertically. And in the wintertime, bees need to conserve heat. And the vertical hive seems to work better. The consensus of opinion at the National Convention in Texas a couple of years ago was that any top bar hives north of the Mason-Dixon line really iffy for wintering over. So bees tend to move up into their honey in the winter, whereas they find it difficult moving laterally. Some people have been able to overwinter them. This last winter, there was some success, but it's a hobbyist type of thing, and it would be fun to experiment with, but real iffy for overwintering, and from what I've been told.
And actually, on a similar point, Larry and Stevens Point sent an email saying they've kept bees for 30 years, but have pretty well given up at this point. They've had very little luck overwintering, and collapse has been a significant problem. What are the challenges for overwintering bees? Tim, you just said that the last winter was really difficult.
Actually, it wasn't.
Wasn't. Oh, sorry. Yeah, what made it not that difficult?
Well, there's a number of things that you need to consider when you're overwintering. One would be keeping your bees in a higher, in kind of a high terrain rather than down in a valley. Tends to keep things drier, and you need to be able to bees need to be able to ventilate the hive and move moisture through. Mm-hmm. They need enough food. They need to be healthy. That's a really important part. If there isn't a whole lot you can do for the bees when winter mm-hmm. starts, you pretty mm-hmm. well have to have the bees up and running to go into the winter. They've got to be healthy. They've got to have enough food. Some sort of backstop to the north is certainly important to keep the north winds off.
Mm-hmm.
I've been fairly successful keeping and overwintering them if they're healthy and they don't have a large mite load, mm-hmm. that sort of thing, then they do pretty well.
Gene, has that been your experience as well?
I found that by reducing the mite load and making sure they have enough to eat, giving them protection from the wind, giving ventilation to the hive but not too much, controlling the moisture. These are the factors that let the bees live over winter.
Great. Let's go back to the phones, and Mark in Green Bay has a question. Hi, Mark.
Hi, thanks for the opportunity.
Sure.
I've got a whole bunch of tree swallow boxes around my house, 55 of them on a fairly small area. It's a tight colony. And my brother-in-law wants to put a bee colony out here, or a beehive. Do you know if tree swallows are predatory on honeybees?
Tim?
Tree swallows love honeybees, and kingbirds, swallows. So there would be some definite competition. One thing I would worry about is if you have a queen going up to a drone congregation area to mate, that queen could get eaten. Hmm. So I would think that those two colonies would be somewhat incompatible.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for that call, Mark. And Gene, I want to make sure we just have a few more minutes here. I want to make sure that we talk about opportunities for training. You do a lot of training. What kind of training opportunities are there for people? I know you're probably mainly in the southern part of the state, but what's a good place to go to find out where trainings are available in different regions?
internet searches seem to bring up the classes that are available, and people come to my classes from all over Wisconsin and from Minnesota, Illinois, Iowa. Our club has a website, madbees.org.
And we have that linked on our Facebook page.
The Wisconsin Honey Producers have a website.
WIHoney.com.
WIHoney.com.
Right.
All right, so those are good starting places to find out what's going on. And also, Gene, I want to make sure we touched on something. You're doing a really interesting training coming up for a National Guard unit that's going to be traveling to Afghanistan. They'll be providing humanitarian aid for agriculture, and beekeeping was specifically requested. So what are you going to be teaching these National Guard members, who I'm guessing a lot of them don't have previous experience, and they're going to be taking it into a very different culture and climate?
The object is to tell them something about honeybees so that when they get there, it won't be totally strange, and to also give them some hands-on experience so that they've seen some bees, they've opened the hive, they've handled them before they get to Afghanistan. Once over there, there's the equivalent of a county agent that teaches the Afghanis about beekeeping, but the National Guardsmen are there to offer support and help.
And why did you get feedback about why the Afghanis have asked specifically for beekeeping?
The Afghanis are doing beekeeping already, and the National Guard found out that their soldiers need to know something about it. So it was the Army that requested the beekeeping training for their National Guardsmen.
Wow, that's really great. I think that's exciting, and it would be great to hear about how it goes after you train them and send them off and they do their work there. Well, in just the last minute or so we have here, I want to make sure people know, again, how to find out more information about beekeeping. There are a lot of topics that we just didn't get to, so I think we'll definitely want to cover this again. But, Gene, why don't you go ahead and give the Dane County Beekeepers Association information?
Our website is www.madbees.org. We have club meetings the first Tuesday of every month. They're always announced on the website. Often they're held at the Steenbach Library.
On the UW campus here in
Madison.
That's
right. You could always call me up. Shall I list my phone number?
Sure.
608-244-5094.
Great. And Tim, president of the Wisconsin Honey Producers Association, why don't you give us that information again?
Sure. It's wihoney.com, and there are contacts there. Feel free to call me from there or email me. There are clubs around the state, and I really feel strongly that if somebody wants to get into beekeeping, that they do take a class, and that they also find a mentor, maybe some time before you actually get into beekeeping.
Great.
So the local clubs would be the way to do that, and that would be important.
Great. Well, Tim Fulton, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Gene Hansen, thank you for coming in and talking about bees.
My pleasure.
We are going to switch gears now, and we are going to talk about Wisconsin's reptiles and amphibians. They are all over, and they need protection and help, and we have a couple guests that are going to be joining us who can tell us how we can help with that. Stay tuned here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.